006, please.
Adopt the Transportation System Development Charge Update 2017 Rate Study, establish an updated rate schedule, and amend code effective January 1, 2018.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. With Portland growing by leaps and bounds, improvements in our transportation system become key in providing travel options to accommodate that growth while continuing the challenging work of meeting our Vision Zero goals. System development charges, or SDCs, are an important resource in this effort, as that growth helps pay for the improvements needed in our transportation system. Consistent with Oregon state law, Portland has strong SDC programs in all of our infrastructure bureaus. That includes parks, water, environmental services, and transportation. It is important that we take the time to review the effectiveness and rationality of the transportation SDC program. And over the past 2 years, transportation staff have been doing exactly that and are now before us with an updated methodology and project list for our consideration. Staff and our consultant will share a presentation with us, and it is a little bit dense, but I feel it is appropriate as it is such an important program, and interested members of the public should understand all the thinking and analysis that went into the proposal. Following that, we'll open it for testimony and, of course, answer any questions that council has. One quick amendment I'd like to place on the table now, and I think you all have copies of that, relates to universities and colleges, and specifically is in response to how the changes in the program are impacting Portland State University. The amendment will replace the square footage calculation currently in the proposal to a student count basis, a student count calculation. The amendment reads, replace table 4-3 as shown in page 37 in Exhibit A, as well as the proposed TSDC rate schedule included as Exhibit B with the attached.
Second.
Okay, moved and seconded. Thank you. Staff have prepared the language, and as I said, you have it all in front of you. And finally, I am out next week in observance of Rosh Hashanah, so I would ask that this item come back for its second reading and vote on September 27th. With that, I'll turn it over to staff and our consultant, or our director, Leah Treat.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman, Mayor Wheeler, and the rest of the City Council. We do have a comprehensive presentation for you today, and I am joined by Kendra Breland and Deb Gallardi. Kendra is from Fair and Peers, and she is the lead planner on the update, and Deb from the Gallardi-Rothstein Group, and she is our technical specialist. So what I'm going to do is provide an overview of the program, including how SDC charges are instrumental in helping us achieve our strategic planning goals. Kendra and Deb are going to discuss the TSDC project list, the primary changes to our methodology, the proposed rates, and how we compare to other cities. I'm then going to close the presentation and open it up for questions from you all. And finally, we do have Pia Welch, Mary Helen Kincaid, Laura Becker, and Elliot Akwai Scott to testify on the topic as well. So I'll start with a quick overview of what SDCs are. SDCs are one-time fees that are paid by new development. The fees cover a portion of capital costs for building public facilities such as streets that will serve the needs of future residents and other users. In assessing TSDCs, local governments have a number of goals. Continue the public policy that new development should pay a portion of the cost of facilities that it requires. Assure that public facilities are constructed within a reasonable time frame so that the system continues to provide mobility for everyone. And provide developers and builders predictability regarding the type, timing, and amount of required fees. And unlike the SDCs for the Water Bureau and BES, PBOT's SDCs are done on a prospective basis. In other words, we collect in advance of building those projects that enhance capacity. And it's also important context to note that funding coming from House Bill 2017, Build Portland, and fixing our streets will largely be used to maintain existing assets. SDCs are not eligible for those uses. They can only be used to expand capacity as required by law.
Could I ask you a question? So the SDCs in this case, you're collecting those resources. They're not necessarily for projects immediately adjacent to those developments. It's going into a fund for citywide development strategies. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. I just wanted to make that clear. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So when I came to PBOT 4 years ago, I led the Bureau through a development of a strategic plan, Portland Progress. It's now in its second iteration, and Portland Progress guides our efforts to fulfill our mission of ensuring that Portlanders can get where they need to go safely, easily, and sustainably. TSDCs are a very important piece of achieving goals outlined in Portland Progress. As we'll describe later in the presentation, the project list includes a number of projects that align with the strategic initiatives at the heart of our strategic work plan. In 1997, the Council created the first multimodal TSDC, allocating total project costs among four modes: motorized vehicles, transit, bicycles, and pedestrians. In 2007, the Council updated the TSDC and gave priority to pedestrian and bicycle modes because of their important contributions to overall mobility in the community. At that time, the rate was set to recover about 40% of the transportation demand created by growth. The current program is based on a 10-year list of TSDC-eligible transportation improvements. The TSDC revenue has helped fund the construction of improvements to support residents, freight, businesses, commuters, and students all over the city. The 2007 program did its job in guiding how the TSDC program should be managed through 2017. As we look towards 2018, it's important that we update the program to ensure it meets Portland's goals over the next decade. Today, we are presenting our proposed update for the 2018 through 2028 program. The program update has grown out of recently adopted out of the Transportation System Plan, the TSP. The TSP process developed the overall project list that was based on Portland's core values regarding mobility, equity, safety, sustainability, and shared prosperity. These same values also deeply informed the TSDC project list. Our city's strong commitment to public engagement sets Portland apart. In line with this tradition, the TSDC project list we are presenting is the result of robust public involvement. First, this list is informed by the overall community involvement that we conducted as part of the update of the TSP. We conducted numerous meetings and listening sessions with neighborhoods, businesses, and community organizations, as well as our city modal committees. We visited many of these groups several times to ensure they knew they had a real voice in our update. And to boost more participation from communities that do not traditionally participate in civic processes, we hosted an online open house over a two-month period, inviting people to review the project list, provide feedback, and learn more about how SDCs will affect their communities. We used Facebook ads to encourage Portlanders to participate in the open house. And as a result, more than 33,000 people used the ad to click through the information about the TSDC update. The online open house received more than 240 comments, more than any other update we've done. Finally, we also engaged our Bureau and Budget Advisory Committee as an important sounding board for the TSDC update process. Throughout 2016 and 2017, we presented to the BBAC with project updates and solicited their input on our proposed changes. With feedback from all of these different sources, we feel the project list reflects many of the diverse needs and opinions of Portlanders. And now, if our technology is working, we want to show you a short video that exemplifies the tools we use to develop the project list.
And happening all over Portland. Have you ever wondered how all those new buildings impact our transportation system? All new developments pay Transportation System Development Charges, or TSDCs. These are one-time fees paid by developers when they build something new. The fee covers part of the cost of building our transportation system. Things like roads, sidewalks, bike lanes, and public transit infrastructure. TSDCs are only one piece of the bigger puzzle that helps fund the resources that all Portlanders use. In addition to TSDCs, developers pay fees to help build parks, sewer, and water infrastructure. The fees are based on how many trips the new development will create. For example, a single-family home will have much less impact than a large grocery store, so the fee is substantially less for a home. The greater the impact a new development will have on our transportation system, the higher its rate. So new developments pay fees to improve our transportation. But where do those fees go? They pay for specific projects that are on the TSDC project list. The list is updated every few years with input from the public. Each project on the list is expected to be built using a combination of TSDC funds plus other funding from grants or other sources. Recent projects that were built using TSDC fees include new sidewalks on 136th Avenue, parts of the MAX system, improvements to Northeast Cully Boulevard that enhanced pedestrian and bike safety. TSDCs are just one tool that helps pay to build Portland's transportation system, along with federal and state grants, gas tax revenues, local taxes you pay, and other sources. The city is currently updating the way it assesses TSDCs and the rate at which developers are charged. It is also updating the list of projects that TSDC revenues can fund. We want a list of projects that Portlanders actually want, that benefit all parts of the city, and meet the needs of our diverse communities. And we want a list of projects that have grants or other financial support, so it's more likely that these projects actually get built. The Portland City Council will make final decisions on the updates and is expected to finalize and implement the amendments by mid-2017. It is our hope that the updated TSDC program will make it easier to build Portland's transportation system to benefit all residents. With so much development happening all over Portland.
Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Well, that last slide, that's a cartoon showing where the council is. My hair's not curly for a start, which I thoroughly
object.
Commissioner Saltzman looks very female. And what's happening in
Commissioner Fritz, may I just say that I actually was heartened by that graphic. It was a significant upgrade in terms of me. The last time I saw my caricature in any official capacity, it was actually a picture of the deputy director of PBOT superimposed on my picture. I have one question for our honored panel. From time to time, government gets a bad rap, and we're accused of talking to ourselves or using language which is not accessible. And we all know what TSDC means, and we get it. I just wonder, is there another way to talk about systems development charges that might actually resonate more with the public? Do other cities call it something else that's more user-friendly? And ought we maybe just, Mayor, to think about that? Because it
Christine Leon is nodding violently.
Impact fees.
Impact fees.
Impact fees. Developer impact fees?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm off. Motion. I would encourage us. Mike Houck and I have an ongoing, lively discussion about the best way to talk about green infrastructure. And are there other ways of saying green infrastructure that don't quite sound as wonky?
Yeah.
And I'm all for moving towards something like developer impact fees or impact fees. I just think they're more accessible than TSDCs.
Yeah, they certainly are.
And it's taking nothing away from an outstanding presentation from you today.
Yep. Thank you for that feedback. I agree.
I also just want to acknowledge and appreciate the Bureau for understanding that if things are put into cartoon form, I'm much more likely to understand your point.
You
so thank
how
you.
Much it caught our attention. Could I just ask a question? I know that what I've got in my packet is the June 9th version of Exhibit A, and I understand you've been working with Parks to make some amendments since then. How are those incorporated into what we're voting on today?
I believe the amendments have been fully incorporated.
Okay.
For the trails and...
And for the definition of a park and those kinds of things?
Yes.
Thank you.
Correct. So, yes. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
It'll be in the rules that...
You have to come up to the microphone, otherwise we can't get to caption.
So it will be in the rules that are going to formalized, but they're not part of the council package.
Yeah. And then I'm glad I highlighted that, because this does give you permission to then change the rules in the administrative rules
exactly.
From now on.
Yep.
And presumably the council at that point would get a notification that the commissioner in charge is changing the rules.
We'll take direction from our commissioner on how we take the rules to council or adopt them through our typical standard input.
Yeah, I'm fine if you do it that way. I would like to know that they have changed.
You're famous now. Could you state your name for the record?
Yes. So I'm Christine Leon. I'm with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I'm the group manager for the Development Permitting and Transit Group.
Thank you. I just want to make sure the fan mail goes to the right place.
Just the cartoons.
Okay. So, to continue with the presentation, the TSDC, or Impact Fee Update, will allow us to spend money more quickly on projects that matter to the public and keep our transportation system evolving with the changing needs of our cities. Thus, we're asking you to adopt the rate study, which includes a project list, an updated methodology and rate schedule, and the associated code amendments. The remainder of the presentation will go over the important details about the update, including the program's project list, the underlying data, and how the rates are assessed. Many of these updates respond to an insightful program analysis that was conducted by PSU in 2015. Finally, we have representatives from our Bicycle Advisory Committee, Freight Advisory Committee, and the Bureau and Budget Advisory Committee for testimony. We'll also be joined by a representative of the Development Review Advisory Committee. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kendra Breland, and she's going to discuss the project list.
Okay. Thank you, Leah. So Oregon System Development Act requires that SDCs be based on a methodology that demonstrates consideration of an adopted capital improvement plan, or CIP. This TSDC project list serves as a CIP required under Oregon state law. The project list is the foundation for the TSDC program, since TSDC funds can only be used to pay for projects that are on that project list. We are required to update the SDC program every 10 years to ensure that the program is current in terms of scope, schedule, and cost of identified projects, but also to ensure that the program is adequately reflecting the impacts of new development. While other SDC programs, such as parks, do update their project lists more frequently, we think that 10 years really strikes the right balance between the time that it takes projects, transportation projects, to get through the design and construction phases. So right off the bat, the main observation of the program is that it includes a substantial increase in the number of overall projects. The 2007 program included 43 projects, while the 2017 program includes 169 projects throughout the city. Some of the high-profile projects that are on the list include the Central East Side access and circulation improvements, the St. John's Truck Strategy Phase 2, the Northeast Cully Boulevard Improvements Phase 2, the Brentwood and Darlington Safe Routes to School, the Outer Division Corridor Safety Improvements, and the Southwest Vermont Street Ped and Bike Improvements. In the following slide, I'll give some overview of how the project list was created, including some of the considerations that went into it. The projects on the TSDC project list come from a combination of the TSP and other citywide plans. The TSP was built around the center strategy, which focuses investments within the city's identified centers. This strategy recognizes that growth makes the most sense when the city, in parts of the city that offer high levels of transit service, walkability, and options for biking and getting around. As Leah mentioned in her remarks, we're a mature urban environment, and so we need to give people choices in how they move efficiently throughout the city. A central tenet of the TSP was providing more equitable transportation system that helps serve traditionally underserved communities. The TSDC project list embraces this core value of the TSP. The TSP also has a strong focus on topics like Vision Zero and structuring its investments to move towards a future that has fewer serious injuries and fewer deaths on the overall transportation system. The TSDC project list has a strong emphasis on projects that improve safety and efficiency of the system. This slide really summarizes the overall process for creating the TSDC project list. Projects on the list are just a subset of the projects being built and constructed within Portland today. There are many projects on the TSP and that are being built that are not funded by TSDCs. We built the TSDC project list from an initial universe of 366 projects throughout the region with an estimated capital value of $5.6 billion. These projects were then evaluated for their eligibility to be included in the TSDC program. And, you know, on the slide, we kind of show those filters that we went through. First of all, Is the project plan to be constructed in the next 10 years, since this is a 10-year program?
Could I ask you a clarifying question? Mm-hmm. So you said the universe of projects comes from around the region, so it's not just the city of Portland.
Correct. Some of the projects are regional in nature. For example, trail projects. I think all of them are located within Portland's jurisdictional boundaries, but I would
Okay, so this is a city process. There's no overlap with JPAC or Metro.
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. So, again, going through these filters, first, is it going to fit within our 10-year construction window? Secondly, does it add kind of person trip capacity? Is it benefiting development in Portland? Because that is a requirement of TSDCs, that they serve future growth. And then thirdly, does the project do more than simply fill potholes or maintain the system, as those sorts of expenditures are not actually eligible under state law for TSDC funds? Once we kind of go through these filters, we landed on 169 projects that could be included for inclusion in the program. These projects have a capital value of $4.5 billion. It's important to note, however, that each of the projects that are in the program are going to be funded through a combination of sources, not just TSDCs, but also grants, state funds, and other kind of sources of funding. The TSDC is just one tool that helps to pay for construction of Portland's transportation system. Once other sources are factored in, the 169 projects were eligible for a total of $589 million in TSDCs over the next 10 years. So this slide really shows kind of how the TSDC project list is allocated across the city. Following on the equity discussion, there's a sizable portion of projects that are being directed towards East Portland. Some of the example projects include the I-84 path extension to Gateway Green, the 122nd Avenue corridor improvements, the Division Midway Connected Centers project, the Outer Stark Safety and Access Transit project, and the Outer Helsley, ped and bike improvements. This slide now shows kind of how the TSDC project list is distributed by mode. As you can see, there's a strong mix of projects that serve all modes. Improving conditions for walking, biking, and transit were also balanced against needs to improve conditions for automobiles and freight. PBOT received substantial input on earlier versions of the project list from residents as well as the business and freight communities. We took those input and added additional projects onto the project list in response to those comments.
Could I ask you another clarifying question? And I believe you stated this right up front. This is for new infrastructure. In other words, we can't spend it on filling potholes. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
On that note, Mayor, I've never seen a request for operations and maintenance for new transportation facilities, and I would very much encourage you. We do have a city policy that says all new facilities should get operations and maintenance. So this is not doing that is how we got into the mess we're currently in, and let's correct that in the future.
Thank you.
So now we're going to change gears a little bit here and talk about another topic, which is the TSDC methodology. The updated methodology is based on an improvement fee-only structure as provided under Oregon state law. In these slides, we'll talk about some of the fundamental data, methods, and assumptions that underline the rate methodology. Simply put, an improvement fee structure constitutes a cost per new unit. The new unit that we're using here is specifically person trips, and more specifically, the number of person trips that are generated during the PM peak hour. So, first of all, why person trips? While Portland's Transportation System Development Charge Program has always been multimodal, this update is the first time that the program will be derived from actual person trip data. Last December, we came to council, and council provided PBOT staff with direction to shift to a person trip model for the TSDC calculations. Moving from vehicular trip data to actual person trip data provides a much more complete picture of how Portland's transportation system is used. The images on this slide provide a simple illustration. Cars don't make trips, people do. And how the people travel really matters. So as you can see on the picture on the left and in the center, you can kind of see this is people driving in single-occupant vehicles. And so in that middle picture, you can just see that the cars have been stripped away, so you can see the people making the trip. By contrast, if we look at the image on the right where people are traveling by bus, you can see that they're using a lot less space. And so their impacts on the system is much, much less. Our end goal has been to help Portland to improve its TSDC program to better reflect how people travel and structure the program to provide a more robust and multimodal project list. The program also shifts in measuring trip making from the daily to the PM peak hour. This shift reflects a desire to measure the impacts during the time when the transportation system is most taxed. So just thinking about a trip made during the middle of the night probably doesn't have as much impact on the system as one made at 5 p.m. And the other piece here is as we move to person trip data is much more robust and available for the PM peak hour. In the next few slides, Deb will talk more specifically about how the rates were developed.
Thank you, Kendra. And I apologize. As you can see from the chart and on the screen, it gets really dense here. We're no longer talking about cartoons. We've got very complex formula system here. That's the current methodology. And part of that complexity was because it was designed to determine costs and SDC eligibility by mode. And when I talk about mode, as Kendra said, it's cars, walking, bikes, et cetera. The new methodology does simplify things, the way the SDCs are calculated, while maintaining the essential elements needed to comply with Oregon statutes. Under the new approach, the capacity costs from the TSDC project list are spread over the growth in trips over the 10-year period to determine a system-wide rate, multimodal. This is for all modes together. This rate then serves as the basis for development of TSDCs by land use type. As was described in the video, different land uses have different impacts on the system. A single-family home generates fewer trips than a grocery store. And so the TSDC methodology takes this into account and determines rates specific for each land use based on its estimated impact. We'll talk more about the rate schedule later in the process. One of the requirements of Oregon law is that the methodology demonstrate consideration of capacity costs needed to serve the demand of future system users specifically. These are development impact fees. The previous slide described how we calculate the new capacity costs per person trip. It's then important to compare that to the existing system value per trip to ensure that new development is not being asked to pay for a higher level of service than the city is currently providing. To determine the existing system value, we relied on information from PBOT's Asset and Status and Conditions Report, which includes a comprehensive inventory of the system, things like sidewalks, pavement, bikes, et cetera. The total existing system value was estimated to be $9.8 billion. To determine the existing system value per trip, we divide that value by the forecast or by the current number of person trips during the peak hour, which from the Metro travel demand model is estimated to be 1,300. The result is a base level of service of about $19,500 per trip. Additional investment by the city up to this level is needed to maintain the current level of service and equitably fund additional system capacity for new development. As I described previously, the TSDC rate is determined by dividing the new capacity cost from the TSDC project list by the growth in PM peak hour person trips over the same period. As Kendra discussed, the updated TSDC project list includes approximately $589 million in capacity increasing cost over the next 10 years. To estimate the growth in trips, we use the 2012 Metro model to estimate total person trips generated by jobs and housing, and then performed a detailed allocation of growth for the city out to the year 2035. This forecast was adopted by the City Council as the official forecast for use in the travel demand model. Since the SDCs are based on a 10-year period, this forecast is then scaled back to a 10-year period through 2027, which estimated growth would produce 70,630 additional PM peak hour trips. So that's the denominator of the equation. We divide the costs by this growth in person trips, and the result is a rate of $8,347. It's important then to compare that rate back to the existing system value per trip of $19,500, and you see that's significantly lower, which basically means the capacity costs included in the project list may be fully attributable to servicing the needs of future growth within the planning period. Based on the rate shown in the previous slide, the $8,000 rate, this slide shows the calculated TSDCs for three different types of land uses: a single-family home, a medical office building, and a grocery store. Again, as we discussed, different land uses have different impacts on the system, and we measure that by person trips. We have data that tells us that a typical single-family dwelling unit generates just over 1.2 person trips during the PM peak hour, which results in a fee of $10,280. Similarly, industry data shows that a 15,000-square-foot medical office generates about 58 PM peak hour person trips, resulting in a fee of about $933,000. Person trip survey data, either national or Portland specific, are available for selected development types only. Where survey data is not available, we use other industry data on vehicle trip rates and convert those to person trips. It is the intent of PBOT to eventually compile a full data set of person trip counts for all land use types that are included in the TSDC schedule.
Can you go back to that slide for
yeah.
a second? Are you going to, at some point, show us the before and after? These numbers are more meaningful if there's a comparison. This represents an increase, a decrease,
yeah.
Whatever.
I will talk a little bit about that later in the presentation for a couple land uses.
But I'd be particularly interested in these three. I mean, the medical office building of $1 million, I don't have any context for that. That's a big number. Is that,
yeah.
is that more or less or roughly the same?
Well, the current, I can tell you for the typical household that the current fee is about $2,800. And
we have that data, so if you want, we can let Deb get through her presentation, and then I can ask Christine Leon to come up and go over some examples for you.
Does yeah, I think it's helpful because my experience in these hearings on impact fees is that there are often winners and losers. And then people come forward and say, I think we're overpaying or we're not paying enough. And then the other thing is we often compare how other jurisdictions treat it. You know, I have been surprised from time to time when people howl about impact fees that we learn that they would pay more, you know, if they lived in places like Tigard and Lake Oswego and the like. So how this changes the status quo versus going forward, and then some sense of how we match up with some of our suburban cities, other you know, neighbors.
I will definitely talk about that.
Just to have context on this.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So while funding 100% of the eligible project cost would allow all 169 projects on the list to be funded, as Leah mentioned, the TSDC program has always relied on leveraging state, local, and grant funds to support portions of the projects. Feedback from, as part of this process, from residential and commercial stakeholders agreed that funding at a 50% level balances the impacts on development and the transportation system. As you can see, a funding level of 50% would raise approximately $294 million over the next 10 years and would reduce the rate to $4,174 per person trip. This slide then just shows those same three land use types with the 50% funded level, and you can see that the fee for a typical single-family dwelling unit would be reduced from over $10,000 to $5,140. Okay, I'll turn it back to Kendra to talk more about the SDC schedule.
Great. And in this section, we're going to talk about the overall rate schedule. So the rate schedule is really where the rubber hits the road from the perspective of what a developer pays. It's the chart that specifies rates for land use categories. As described earlier, the fees are based on the number of trips generated by unique land uses. As estimated earlier by actual person trip data where available, or derived from ITE person trip data, the next best source. The proposed rate schedule includes 27 land use categories. These are similar to the current program, although 14 categories were either eliminated or consolidated, and some new categories were added based on stakeholder feedback. So we wanted to highlight a few of the biggest changes. First, for the residential categories, we created two single-family rates, one for households larger than 1,200 square feet and another for smaller homes. There has been substantial interest in recognizing that not all single-family homes have the same impact. It is reasonable to assume that smaller homes tend to have fewer occupants and could be reasonably expected to have a lesser overall impact on the transportation system. While not enough data yet exists for us to definitively set more varied rates by square footage, we believe that the city can start moving in this direction. Recommended actions in this update are to set a fee for smaller homes similar to multifamily homes. The program will also continue to exempt affordable housing permanently, as well as accessory dwelling units through mid-2018. Moreover, we think there is merit to the city beginning to collect new person trip data from a variety of housing types such that more varied rates can be set in future updates.
So I'd just like to compliment you on doing that, which of course is similar to what we've done in parks. And just a heads up, you have to think about what happens with a renovation that then changes whether it's over or under 1,200 square feet. I'm sure you looks like you've already thought of that. But
yes.
How are you currently proposing to deal with that?
And I wanted to see, did staff want to speak specifically to the code?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll wait till later. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Okay, and relative to the update also thought a bit about non-residential rates. This update consolidates shopping and retail rates in recognition of the changing nature of many retail centers and the needs of small businesses. Under the existing TSDC rate schedule, there are several land uses which can create complexity when tenants change. Under the proposed rate schedule, categories have been combined or eliminated, and for increased cost predictability to businesses applying for tenant improvements. One final major new element to this update is the person trip adjustment. As was discussed at the December meeting, in moving to a mode-neutral person trip-based TSDC program, it is important to recognize that how development within the central city and other designated centers have less of an impact on the overall transportation system. The way we approached this is by evaluating the space efficiency of walking, biking, and other modes. In a mature urban environment, expanding roadways is often not feasible. Thus, it is important to figure out how we can help people move, more people move within the same amount of space. The factors on the screen show the difference in space usage by mode. Carpools use less space than drive-alone trips. Bikes use 88% less space. And transit trip, on average, uses a staggering 97% less space. Based on the space efficiency calculations on the prior slide and the mode shares estimated for centers relative to the rest of the city using a combination of data from the Oregon Household Activity Survey and the Metro model, the update recommends TSDC reductions of 33% for eligible uses within the downtown and 8% for centers and areas proximate to light rail stations. These fee adjustments will incentivize the right development in the right areas of the city, reinforcing the goals of Portland Progress and the TSP. The city doesn't take lightly these fee adjustments, as they recognize that they reduce the amount of TSDCs that can be generated over time. These adjustments are afforded offered to the types of development that are likely most likely to benefit from nearby transit service and the more walkable, bikeable nature of these areas. Multifamily, commercial, and light industrial areas that are paired with mixed use and built to within 0.75 of maximum floor area ratio. This structure is consistent with the city's comprehensive plan goals to focus growth in the central city, other centers, and areas nearby light rail stations, and to shift away from drive-alone trips to more environmentally sustainable modes. I'm now going to transition back to Deb, who can give some perspectives on how these proposed rate updates affect Portland's position in the region from the perspective of affordability.
So, this chart here shows you both the current TSDC for a single-family home and the proposed. And you can see that the current, which is at the very low end of the chart, is about $2,800. In the last TSDC update, the rates were capped at this level in order to generate a fee that was then near the middle of the range of comparison of other communities. Since that time, staff research has shown that the TSDCs in other areas have increased, while the city's rates have remained unchanged, and that results in the current fee being at the lower end. The proposed fee, as you can see, moves slightly more towards center.
Can I ask you a question on that? Mm-hmm. Go back to that slide. I know that the argument we often hear is that you have to look at all the costs in the basket, and obviously the cost of dirt in Portland tends to be more expensive than in other places, and you add other costs, regulatory costs, charges, fees, and the like. And so I guess I understand conceptually that's one way of measuring, you know, apples to apples. But when you see a chart like this, and we are somewhere like below a third of what Beaverton is charging for impact fees, these are the identical fees. So
correct.
There's they're not adding some other component of it that we
correct.
Don't?
Yeah, that's correct. And in the next slide, we'll look at the full, all the systems together.
And what is the short version of why Beaverton is charging close to $18,000? I mean, why there's such a gap between what we charge and Beaverton?
Well, I don't know Beaverton's situation, but, there's obviously in that part of the metro area a lot of infrastructure needs. And, your project list is based on just prioritized projects within the 10-year period. Other communities will look at both a longer view and not sort of cap the project list. They will look at the full potentially list from the TSP, for example. So part of it depends on the mix of projects and the funding level. Also, what we're recommending here is a 50% funding level. The current funding level, I believe, was based on 40%. So in part, that's why yours are lower relative to others.
Yeah, it's just interesting. I mean, we get these charts at budget time, and you know, there's a narrative that some people have about how just irrationally high our fees and charges are. Now, you know, we can always do better. There's always customer service issues. There's always value issues. There's right. always, but you know, like I'm reminded when we do our annual utility report, and people seem to be shocked that you pay more for water in a number of suburban areas. And mm-hmm. now, the public doesn't quite look at it that way. I mean, it still comes mm-hmm. down to what's the cost, what's the affordability component within the place that you live. And I get that. But I do think that I think the regional data is important because it raises interesting questions. That's an interesting question, why we are a third of what Beaverton charges. So thank you.
And this is apples to apples. This is just transportation city to city. Okay, mm-hmm. thank you.
And the next slide is also apples to apples, but now we're building on the other infrastructure systems for which you charge SDCs. And that the other communities were including those on top. So you can see in this chart that Portland is more towards the center in the current, and that's because the other bureaus have increased their SDCs in recent years. And the total SDC cost for a typical single-family home currently is about $25,000, assuming it's not in the central city. So with the increase that's proposed for the TSDC, you would move up one position but still remain in the middle.
Commissioner Fritz, does this reflect the increase in parks SDCs that the council adopted but deferred?
Yes. Oh, no, we didn't defer. It's currently what we're collecting. We deferred it for a little while, but...
But then we put it into place. Mm-hmm. So this includes the increase that the council agreed to.
I believe so.
It does.
So Gresham is listed three times in three different bars. Beaverton is listed twice. Are these truly comparators?
Yes. Yeah, so Gresham has different geographically based charges because, for example, Pleasant Valley and Springwater are kind of, you know, new developing areas as opposed to the more mature infrastructure that's in the city proper. And so they charge in that basis. And the same with Beaverton, that they have a separate charge for South Cooper Mountain because of the significant infrastructure needs specific to that area.
Interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So expanding a bit now to include other types of development fees, as was mentioned, the cost of development goes beyond just the SDCs. So this slide excludes the new inclusionary housing fees, shows that the current total fee burden for a new four-story apartment valued at $4.2 million would be approximately $750,000 with the new TSDC in place. In this case, the TSDC would account for $125,000 of that total, up about 19% from the current TSDC program. And we have one more example that shows, in this case, a six-story apartment with retail on the ground floor, valued at $6.3 million, would be assessed total fees. Again, this is SDCs plus other development fees, excluding the inclusionary housing fee. The total fees are about $1 million. Of this amount, TSDCs would account for approximately $160,000, up 26% from the current TSDC program. Now, it should be noted that, as Kendra pointed out, there's a number of adjustments that and discounts as part of the new program. And if this building were located in the central city, it would qualify for a 33% reduction in the TSDCs.
What do you mean by inclusionary housing fee?
I'm going to have to defer that to staff.
As far as I'm aware, there's no fee to be in the inclusionary housing program.
I'm actually going to defer that discussion to staff.
Christine, so one of the things that we did was just looked at if someone didn't do inclusionary housing, if they elected to pay the fee instead,
okay,
the impact of that. So
okay,
we just stripped it out of the entire analysis.
Great. Okay. Just want to make clear
about that. I just want to make sure I'm not missing something in terms of your new methodology. So let's take the example of a six-story apartment building. Is there a difference in the fee that you would calculate based on whether or not there was on-site parking?
So parking is not a final destination. So what we assess is the use, so the retail portion or the residential portion or the mixed use, but not parking itself. It's interesting.
I'm just trying to, and to help me understand that. So a six-story apartment building built, say, under the transit-oriented development program that's across the street from the MAX, has an express bus, and the city's best trail. No parking, and it actually markets to people who say, here's a new way of living. You can get a small apartment, walk to work, take public transit. Up the street is the same building with twice the amount of parking that's required, you know, with a lot of parking that goes free because they want people to be able to park their cars in. And it just happens, you know, we know that, 70% of people in apartment buildings own a car. So, in effect, it has, that building is encouraging people to, you know, make it as convenient as possible with their cars. I'm just curious, why wouldn't we treat the two differently?
So, what we would assess is on the number of residential units. And the shift that we've made in this new methodology is to count the person trips they make regardless of mode. So if you get in your vehicle, that is one trip by one person. If you walk down the street, that's one trip by one person. So the the mode is not what we are assessing now. It is the use and the number of PM peak hour person trips that are being made. There is an example, if we want to get into the details, of the Emory apartment.
I think I understand your methodology. I'm struggling with it a little bit.
Yeah.
I get it. And since we are talking about impact, help me understand that the person that leaves their apartment and walks down the sidewalk and they weigh about 100 pounds and they do that trip a lot and over a lifetime have no impact on the sidewalk, versus the person that parks their Hummer in their apartment building and drives a lot and over time does have an impact on the street. Is there a difference that we care about in terms of calculating STCs?
So the person that walks down the sidewalk needs that infrastructure as well. And so our capital projects that we want to build out to accommodate growth include projects to put in more protected bike lanes, to build sidewalk infrastructure, to accommodate transit systems and make our transit system more accessible and walkable. There are some road projects, but they mainly deal with freight capacity. So, and that is the essence of what we're trying to build, is for people to make trips on the system. The discounts that Kendra talked about in the centers and the central city are based on, I think, what you are really getting to, Commissioner Fish, the impact that a person makes on the system.
The director is here.
It's different based on the mode that they take.
Yeah.
So,
if I could just add, I think it goes back to what the mayor pointed out right when we opened up, is we don't charge SDCs for adjacent capacity. We charge it for overall capacity in the city. That's what we're trying to do.
And I'm going to be clear. My questions are designed to understand the approach and how you've chosen this approach. I'm absorbing it. I'm not ready to show my hand. One last question. We had a conversation a few weeks ago about so-called smart cities, mm-hmm. another term I hope we abolish and replace with something else. And the gist of it is, it's an artful marketing ploy, in my opinion, for putting in the infrastructure for autonomous vehicles. And I think my own personal view is we've jumped through a lot of hoops without actually asking some threshold questions. That said, are we budgeting any SDC money under this program for any of the improvements that are required to support smart cities and the new grids?
Yes, we are, because those smart city projects will definitely enhance capacity. One of the things that we are using the current SDC program for is to look at putting in sensors to do some of the pedestrian counts out on 122nd Avenue and Hawthorne and I think Division corridors. So yeah, the essence of intelligent transportation system, the ITS projects that our traffic signals folks have started maybe 25 years ago, those are smart city projects. Again, it's rebranded into something new, but those are really capacity enhancing for the system.
Well, let me just be clear, because the council made a very emphatic statement that we weren't going to spend public money ahead of deciding what we were going to do with respect to smart cities. I draw, from what you just said, I draw a sharp distinction between investments in things that advance Vision Zero, advancements in things that do safety, and the line that I think we have to be more mindful of is what appears to be building out a grid for a system that we have not yet determined whether we're going to A, support or invest in. And you used 122nd as an example, and I'm glad you did, because frankly my fear on smart city, one component of it, is that we are going to sort of willy-nilly authorize investments in the central part of our town on the theory that this is where autonomous vehicles are more likely to be used, and it's going to work against our equity goals of, frankly, making the common sense safety improvements in the rest of the city they've been crying for, legitimately demanding. And so, Mayor, we had this conversation at Council, and we had actually a understanding that we would first do the assessment and the study and then come back and talk about it. So it would be my expectation that we're not using SDCs in this plan to drive smart cities until the council has authorized a smart city policy. unless I'm misstating council policies.
Thank you for that feedback, Commissioner. We look forward to the future conversations about that. It's really helpful guidance and feedback for us. To your earlier question, Commissioner Fish, about a comparison of current charge and the proposed charge, we will submit that in follow-up information to you and the rest of the council so you can have an idea on a case-by-case basis what kind of changes we're looking at.
Good, thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. So if I can wrap up, over the next few months, we're going to complete the last few elements relative to the update. That would be the administrative rules, updating the overlay areas to align with the new program. And we really are hopeful today that the council is going to direct us to complete these steps to have a full program ready to commence on January 1st, 2018. I also would like to point out the letters of support that are included in your packet. It includes support from the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission, the Transportation Justice Alliance with leadership organizations, including the Amalgamated Transit Union, Local 757, APANO, Community Cycling Center, Opal Environmental Justice, Oregon, and NEA, Portland Streetcar, the Development Review Advisory Committee, Go Lloyd, coalitions and neighborhood associations, including Sullivan's Gulch and Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods, the Street Trust, the Portland Pedestrian Advisory Committee, the Portland Freight Committee, the Portland Bicycle Advisory Committee, the Portland Commission on Disability, and Union Pacific Railroad. And so with that, I would like to call up our invited testimony. We have Laura Becker, Pia Welch, Elliot Akwai Scott, and Mary Helen Kincaid. And when they are finished, we'll still be here and available for questions that you may have of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Do we have any public testimony? I apologize. We love invited testimony. Come on up. Commissioner Saltzman, did you want to make the introductions or just let them introduce themselves?
They can introduce themselves.
Very good.
Carla, we love the graphic. 1851. But you knew that.
Do you want to go ahead and start us off? Thank you.
Sure. I'm Mary Helen Kincaid. I'm the chair of the Development Review Advisory Committee and am here speaking on behalf of DRAP. A lot's been said. I want to commend the PBOT staff that came to several DRAC meetings and went over a lot of the statistics, responded to many questions. In fact, some of those slides, I think, were a result of DRAC asking for the overview of impacts of fees. I also want to point out that this was historically, for those people that have been around DRAC for a long time, this was a wonderful collaborative effort on behalf of the members of DRAC. It wasn't a we versus they. It was informed people in a room coming to a collaborative recognition of the needs of the city and transportation infrastructure. Not to say there wasn't lively discussion, but they did come to support this proposal as you saw today. In recognition of that, the overarching message that DRAC wanted me to bring was we need to look at SDC fees in a holistic way. We need to see how those fees and regulations combined affect development, and not in a every 3 months, sometimes every 2 years. I don't know who can convene that. I think you've heard me say before, I'm not a big fan of silo government, but all the different infrastructure bureaus are under different commissioners, different directors, but I think there needs to be some sort of...
We got three under two,
okay,
so that's progress.
We'll pick on Commissioner Saltzman because he's... But I think someone needs to convene so that we look at all fees and regulations as they... so that they aren't popping up every 7 months, maybe every 2 years, what that impact is. And in a letter that DRAC sent in May, and then again in our July letter to council, that was one of the first things we mentioned. Look at the overarching impacts that development fees and charges have on development, because quite frankly, and just recently, I don't know why it didn't come to my awareness, but in watching like the Home for Everyone work session video and all those kinds of, I don't know how you keep track of all the fees and the overall impact. So I would think it would be informative to council members as well as the public, what's this really costing us? Not that Home for Everyone has any impact on development, but the water charges, the sewer charges, do you remember what the BES fees were increased? I mean, those kinds of things I think would be informative, and they would also help bring the development community more in line with neighborhoods and people that are being impacted by those fees. So DRAC, I think on the basis of yet a third plea to have some sort of commission, if it's a Gator study, if it's whatever, of how all the fees that the city charges impacts development. Because the bottom line in everybody's mind, every time you add a dollar to a development, it adds a dollar to the cost of that housing. And that's just plain and common sense. I mean, that's